A significant upcoming change is the integration of AI as teammates and work teams, shifting the perspective of AI from tools to collaborative teammates.
Welcome to the Training Journal podcast. I'm editor at Training Journal and your host, Joe Cook. This episode continues our deep dive into artificial intelligence, and we start with Stella Lee, director at Paradox Learning, that puts AI as a tool into context for us.
I think we need to take a step back and look at the bigger picture of AI as a field, what I called AI literacy, to understand not just the tools, but what is AI? Do we have a shared definition of what AI is? Understand different techniques. What do they do? What do they do best? What are the limitations of the tools? How is data, the training data, the quality of data, how the data that we feed into AI models, how is it impacting the outputs? Understand decisions that are being made, models about these data sets. Are they inherent biases? Are they misinformation? The data representational? Are we omitting certain sets of data?
CEO and founder at Lever Transfer of Learning, Emma Weber suggests we think differently about AI use.
I think one of the key things for me is, what problems are we looking to solve using the technology? And it could be that it's actually, we can be more efficient in a process that we didn't think was a problem in the past. So it's really looking at what are the problems we weren't able to solve, possibly in a scalable way before generative AI, but also are there things that can be done more efficiently and easily now we have access to these tools?
Bob Mosher, CEO and Chief Learning Evangelist at Apply Synergies, speaks about keeping up to date with a variety of AI tool offerings as things inevitably change.
I don't know if I've ever seen a technology advance so quickly and move to the forefront in the L&D space as this. So, and the rules seem to be changing all the time. So I think versus what we don't. And obviously generative AI is huge. So content generation is a remarkable skill that we have to get better at, promptings involved in all of that, right? And then the reality is, ChatGPT and those kinds of platforms have to be a part of that. And so understanding the rate at which all these tools are coming out from all the major players and not so major players.
Stella Lee deepens Bob's point about the often overwhelming number of options to choose from and L&D's role within that.
I would like to see us to get more actively involved in the AI tool evaluation and selection process. The market is really crowded right now with AI tools, and we're trying to figure out what to use for learning and development. It is not obvious. AI tools that are good for learning are not always explicitly labeled learning, and we don't want that decision to be driven purely by IT or other business unit. I think we need to get involved and understand what AI tools are best suited for L&D. There's an opportunity for us to really dig into the AI pedagogy. By that, I mean, instead of replacing or augmenting existing learning practices, does AI, what kind of new opportunity, new methods of learning is AI bringing us? We also need to think about, is there a reason to use AI, or do we just actually need better instructional design? Is AI becoming the shiny new toy that blind us all without thinking through what's the best learning experience we can have?
Kathy Hoy is the CEO of CLO 100 and brings our focus to some more specific tools.
I mean, we're using AI a lot. We're still definitely in that experimental phase. We use a tool called Jasper AI, which I absolutely love. And myself and my business partner, Robert, we were sort of talking the other day and saying we should probably make Jasper, officially one of the team and get him on the website. It's a really helpful tool. I think over the last kind of few months, we've been refining how we work with it, putting the time in to make sure that it understands our tone of voice, the language that we like to use. But it's getting so good now. I was asking questions the other day about our own program, and it can answer things better than I can now. So It's incredible. I think it helps us massively with regards to marketing content, you know, the emails that we send to people. It helps to reword things. You know, I have a tendency to kind of write as I speak. And actually, while sometimes that can be useful, a lot of the times you want something to sound maybe a little bit more professional, and it just does it for you, you know, and it's so quick and it just saves you so much time. And as a small business, I really can't emphasize how valuable that is.
Erica Farmer is co-founder of AI and future skills specialist at Quantum Rise Talent and talks about how AI is making her job not only easier, but more enjoyable too.
So at Quantum Rise, we're using, of course, ChatGPT-4 and a lot of the GPTs in the GPT store we have played with are fantastic. I love the data analysis tool. It's so easy to use. The things that I and this is where I hope we do walk the walk rather than just talk the talk, is, you know, things that you're not very good at or that you don't particularly enjoy as part of your role. So for me, spreadsheets, numbers, finances, etc. I'm finding it A, a lot more interesting and engaging, and B, it frees up my headspace of, rather than trying to figure out formulae in cells, I can start to think, what's this data telling me? What does it mean to my business? What's the actual narrative? And therefore, what are the decisions that we need to make around that? So I find that super exciting.
Author of Get That Course Online, Jeanette Tessier, tells us how she uses ChatGPT.
So I use ChatGPT, and in particular, I use the paid version, ChatGPT-4, mainly the text. I do have access to the other bits and pieces, but I've played around a little bit with the image generation and that kind of thing. I shall probably look at that a little bit more, but certainly mainly at the moment I use the text generation stuff. And I use it more than anything else as a way of kickstarting creativity. So finding ideas, fleshing out ideas. I have had a few occasions where I have described the title of something that I'm thinking of doing and asking ChatGPT, for example, to tell me what it thinks that thing is about, which can be a really interesting way round of doing it. What I haven't used ChatGPT for is to create content that I'm going to use out of the box. It has created content for me that I have looked at, and then I have in some cases very heavily edited it. And in other cases, I have put some stuff together that has needed some very light touch editing. But what I am very keen on is that if I do put anything out there that has used a significant proportion of AI in its creation, then I will absolutely say that, so that hopefully people can start tuning in and discerning between when something has been human generated and when something has been AI generated.
I totally agree with Jeanette. I use ChatGPT to help with a lot of training journal stuff, such as creating social media posts or article titles. I comfortably share an article into ChatGPT as it's going out on the web anyway. At the moment, I don't publish completely AI-generated articles unless they're clearly labelled an experiment, but I do find it useful for taking the work out of transcriptions and summaries and the like. I also use Clean Voice to help polish up audio of this podcast, DALL-E to generate images when I can't find something specific I want, and of course, TechSmith Audio 8 for the transcripts. Going back to the security point is the ever-switched-on Trish Yule, generative AI leader and founder of Owl's Ledge.
At Owl's Ledge, we're using a range of enterprise-grade AI tools that prioritize data privacy and corporate controls. So my selection process is pretty stringent. We're focusing on vendors with a proven track record in both AI safety and responsible AI practices. For example, we're leveraging enterprise-grade tools like Microsoft Bing Chat, aka Copilot, and OpenAI models via secure API. And what are we using them for? We're using them for things like intelligent content creation, for adaptive learning, for AI-powered digital coaching, such as what I talked about before. We're using it to power learning analytics, including predictive learning analytics. And we're also using enterprise-grade AI for being able to deliver hyper-realistic simulations. And that's everything from tabletop exercises to role plays to immersive environments. And the list is growing on and on.
Emma Weber also echoes this.
And a consideration is to think of, are you inside an organization where you can use these tools, be mindful of what data you're sharing, being mindful of how it is the data will be used. Of course, that is all important with how you use your tools and whether you've got the proper privacy controls and data controls within them.
Bias is something that pops up every time you mention AI, and Trish Yule tackles it.
But again, what really makes a difference is that we need to prioritize how it is that we're using these AI tools in a responsible, ethical way, especially when it comes to protecting people and protecting our organizations. And so how do we do so with workflows that include human oversight? How do we do so with workflows that include making sure that we're being attentive to mitigating against things like bias, that we're controlling for things like hallucination and drift? Again, how is it that we're using these tools in a responsible way that are appropriate for corporate use in the workplace?
Part of our role in learning and development is to make sure that we are approaching our work with empirically tested ways of working. So ease of finding research is something Emma Weber shares about a tool called Elicit.
And it's a really great tool for looking at, for research papers. So when someone sort of says, oh, have you got any data to prove why it's so useful to set goals or action plans at the end of learning? Of course, it's a no-brainer that that is a really great thing to do, get people planning ahead for how they're going to implement their learning. But of course, some people will want the research for that. So using a tool such as Elicit, and it's elicit.com, to help you find some research papers that will back up your thinking around that, it's a really great tool. So many tools, many uses.
And what about our role and how AI affects the organizations we work in and for? Artist and senior learning consultant at NIIT, Leo Locker, approaches these changes with her trademark enthusiasm.
I think new technologies or new opportunities always reshuffle the playing field. Personally, I think that's super exciting. You know, it's the same with media. Radio didn't replace newspapers and TV didn't replace newspapers, and neither did the internet. But as we've seen, is every medium, every way of doing something gets closer and closer to what it's actually best at. And the niches keep moving and keep reshuffling themselves. So I think a similar thing is happening now again. That in itself as a pattern is not new, but it's very exciting and I'm keen to see what we can make happen with that.
Emma Weber reminds us that we are all on different journeys.
How AI is affecting the work of L&D right now, I see as really varied across organizations. So some organizations are really leveraging the tools and looking at how they can use them to fast track content creation, how to, you know, really solve the meaty problems such as learning transfer and really embracing the technology. I see other organizations so busy that they're almost not in a position to embrace it. And so I do think it's this whole challenge of needing to slow down to really be able to bring the new technologies in. We need to create the space to do that and to see where it can add most value. So I just see it being really varied across different organizations at the moment. And I think there will be more of a drive top down to really help people find the time to prioritize experimenting and then rolling out the technology.
Trish Uhl uses her considerable experience to look at what new roles there might be in the future.
The name of the game in 2024 is going to be workforce productivity. And AI's advancements are therefore transforming the landscape of L&D within organizations. It's not just seen as a tool anymore, but as a transformative element that is reshaping job functions and creating new opportunities. This evolution has led to the emergence of new roles in learning and development industry, such as an AI orchestrator, which is somebody who integrates AI capabilities into L&D teams. There's also chatbot and human facilitators who manage the interactions between learners and AI systems. We have data detectives who are more and more enabled and empowered by the use of AI for the interpretation and analysis of learning data. And then we have other leadership roles like a head of business behavior who is someone who would understand and predict organizational behavior changes due to AI implementation. These roles not only exist, they indicate a shift from the traditional instructional design and delivery towards a more integrated AI-enhanced learning experiences, highlighting the need for new skills and capabilities in learning engineering, AI fluency, data analytics, and managing hybrid human and AI teams.
Stella Lee develops this point by emphasizing that this should be a whole organization approach.
I see there's a lack of a holistic approach of an AI adoption or implementation strategy that applies across the entire organization. What I mean by that is that instead of looking at just what kind of AI tools to use and purchase or implement or build, we're not looking across at multiple factors that are implementing, that are impacting implementation. There's lacking of a readiness assessment. It's lacking understanding of the current tech infrastructure, lacking assessment of the data quality or the suitability of what data is available. And also looking at the culture, the organizational's capabilities, as well as how do you measure success of your implementation project.
Tricia Uhl predicts us having AI colleagues, not just tools that we use.
A significant upcoming change is the integration of AI as teammates and work teams, shifting the perspective of AI from tools to collaborative teammates. This necessitates adaptations in management and leadership to lead hybrid teams effectively. These are going to be teams comprised of both humans and AI agents. AI teammates are expected to boost efficiency and productivity by automating task completion, such as adaptive content creation, automatically tailored to specific audiences. This will enable AI's human team members to focus on more complex and strategic work. So the integration of AI into teams emphasizes the need for L&D practitioners to become AI fluent, to learn how to collaborate effectively with artificial intelligence, to leverage its capabilities, to use AI to rapidly automate their work and upskill and reskill themselves in developing new skills and capabilities in order to keep pace with an increasingly automated world.
Continuing and almost contrasting Trish's point about job roles, Kathy Hoy talks about the human aspects.
I hear that, you know, people are concerned for their jobs when it comes to AI. And I think in learning and development, we really just don't need to worry about that. I think if anything, AI is going to help elevate the role of learning and development in the organization. And I think it will remove the tasks and jobs that, frankly, a human being doesn't need to do. So I think we really need to embrace this as an industry. You know, our role, really, as I see it in the organization, is to build connections, to provide or to understand the context in the organization, to build relationships with our stakeholders, to remove barriers for learning. You know, and actually, if AI can do all the other stuff or help us do the other stuff, then that's great, because that just frees up our time to do the really important stuff that actually a human being does need to do.
Emma Weber agrees and says it shouldn't all be about the process.
But one of the key things for me is we move forward into this post-industrial revolution, we're really going to be needing to focus on what it means to be human and how we can really leverage being human and not treating humans in their organizations as if they're machines. So one of the things I see at the moment is a lot of the way that we're perhaps even training leadership is that it's in quite a mechanistic fashion. We give people processes, we give them the toolkit. But if it's process or you're teaching in a mechanistic way, the machines will be able to do that better. So I really see the growth space for learning and development is really helping people leverage what it means to be human. So that is not managing our emotions, it's leveraging our emotions. Machines don't have emotions. So we as humans do.
Have you missed out on recent features like the Epic Strategy Blueprint from Ryan Austin? Or the importance of remaining relevant from L&D legend Konrad Gottfredson? Maybe you've not noticed blogs about marketing a small business or resilience in the 21st century. Don't worry, It's an easy fix by just heading to trainingjournal.com and signing up for our newsletter.
Stella Collins, co-founder and chief learning officer at Stella Labs, thinks about things in a different way.
The question I wish you'd asked is, what do you need to know or be able to do before you can use AI to solve real challenges in L&D? AI is a great efficiency tool. You can ask it to suggest ideas for your podcast or a report you're writing, and it quickly gives you something back to work with. But unless it's an area where you're already familiar with the context and what options are available, then you can't tell whether what the AI has generated is gold dust or it's just rubbish that sounds convincing, but it might be untrue or it might be outdated. So we can't rely on AI in L&D to solve all our challenges if we don't really know sufficient about the potential solutions to validate the output from AI. If you don't know how learning really works, then you might be really efficient in generating way too much content that might be inaccurate or irrelevant. And that's not going to help you solve the problem of, you know, upskilling your team for the future. Additionally, you run the risk of losing your credibility as a professional and devaluing learning.
This is such an important point, and people are often overlooking the quality of AI output and not questioning it. I've written an editor's blog about not rushing to trust this too much due to my own experience of getting such varied results and prompts. Digital director at People Unboxed, Paul Westlake, continues to emphasise the expertise that we bring to our roles.
L&D professionals are responsible for creating engaging, effective training materials. And to do that, yeah, they need the knowledge. Yes, they need to be an SME, but they also need creativity skills, they need storytelling skills, they need instructional design expertise. And those are things that AI can't do yet. So again, we can add more to the piece of learning than simply saying, here's the facts, here's what you need to know. Recall the most impactful piece of learning you've ever completed. The chances are it included a personal story or an experience of some sort. And AI just simply doesn't have that lived experience to draw on yet. AI can create the how, but it's the personal touch that brings the why to a piece of learning. And that is all down to you and your expertise and empathy for the listener or the learner.
Stella Collins highlights that our skills in L&D are even more in demand now.
So what you really need is an effective framework that helps you work and build a really good solution in the first place. You know how that works. And then you can use AI to generate elements that build in that framework, that add to that framework. So you can use it to help you generate ideas, to edit so that, you know, you get the right tone of voice. You can keep iterating and building until you've found, you know, what works as a really good solution. But you always have to validate the quality of the output. So that's where it's really important that you have the skills to validate that what's coming out is, you know, is evidence-based, is well-informed and relevant to the context of your challenge. So I believe as an L&D professional, you need to know sufficient about the brain and evidence-based learning techniques to know what really works in terms of solving L&D challenges, real business challenges. And then you can use the AI to help you deliver a really effective solution, but you can do that much more quickly and efficiently. So you become effective and efficient.
I love this point from Vinaz Chukbuktu, integrity leader at IKEA Group, about us creating or emphasising our role in organisations.
The possibility of automating administrative tasks, mundane things that we need to do as L&D professionals, actually it will allow us more time and give us more energy, actually, to focus on the interactions that matter. And it will challenge us to rethink our role, rethink our value, and reposition ourselves within the companies.
Bob Mosher talks about AI impacting L&D so much that it actually gets us out of the training business entirely.
Because training will be commoditized in many ways, I do believe, if it hasn't been already, frankly. So we've never been in the training business, never. We are in the performance business, and we have relied on training as our tip of the sword. It's not going to be anymore.
Which brings us to AI and coaching and changes happening here. Emma Weber specializes in this area.
I'm going to try and keep this answer short about how we can use technology in coaching and mentoring, but it's a real passion of mine. There's so many different ways you can use technology and tools to support coaching and mentoring. Partly you need to think about, well, what is my definition of coaching and mentoring? And what am I trying to do with this coaching and mentoring? Particularly for mentoring, where a lot of it is about shared experience and information, there's going to be many ways that people can access. I know Marshall Goldsmith is working on a Marshall bot, but which is really, it's not really a coaching tool. It's more about sharing Marshall's wisdom. So there's going to be tools out there which are helping share perhaps the legacy of leaders that, you know, we admire or that have got information to share. So that kind of leans into the mentoring space.
Vinaz Chukwuchu can see some uses for AI in coaching, but not in others.
If you're a full-time coach, maybe it can help analyze large amounts of data and to help you identify patterns about your coachee's strengths and weaknesses and give suggestions. Not really 100% there. We will come to that. But also, there is a big opportunity in psychometric testing, for instance, that can be automated. Another part could be matching mentors and mentees, coaches and coachees. That takes a lot of time, but with AI, that can be simplified. On the other hand, I am really not convinced about AI coaches, the chatbots yet, because it needs specific feedback and coaching, create coaching plans. And that depends on the data collection, the data cleaning, the verification. And I wonder if organizations which use coaching and mentorship in their learning and development sphere have time and focus to work with that. So that's a question in my head.
Vidhi Devani, Learning and Development Program Coordinator at Abstract, talks about the process too.
Technology has really transformed our understanding of the relationship between professional coach and coachee. With the help of AI algorithms, we're able to seamlessly pair the right coach with the right coachee, taking into account the skills and background to ensure a perfect match. It's been a real game changer in my work at Abstract, AI making the whole process much more efficient. But, you know, in the middle of all these technological progress, we must not forget the importance of human connection in coaching. One of the recent projects I've been involved in my work at Abstract has been the launch of Democratized Coaching Solution, the Coaching Hub. I coordinate an incredible team of coaches from across the globe, and it's been so rewarding to hear from the coachees just how valuable they found the sessions and the new approaches they've been able to take to supercharge their careers. So while we appreciate AI for its efficiency, let's not forget the importance of human connection and coaching.
Trish Yule explains that with specific use cases, coaching can now be a cost-effective approach.
How can technology and AI help with coaching in the workplace? Well, AI and technology can help with coaching in the workplace by actually using digital coaching to solve one of training's perennial problems, and that is how to make training stick. How do we help people transfer what they learned in training to what they apply in practice on the job? And we know that one-on-one coaching can be a powerful means of promoting this kind of training transfer, but one-on-one coaching has historically been cost prohibitive and difficult to scale, and therefore reserved only for a lucky few. So enter artificial intelligence.
Matthew Borg, Managing Partner, Actaeon Communication and Learning, continues this point.
At Actaeon, we're all about people. And so whenever technology is used, it's used to serve people, to develop people, people who then are able to better serve the organization. And coaching and mentoring are very relational activities. There's such a personal focus. There's a history that's developed. Relationship is built, nuanced feedback given. These are all really valuable aspects of coaching that technology can't replicate. But coaching and mentoring are also very time intensive. So we've begun to develop some AI coaches with some of our learning programs to support colleagues in areas where a coach would have otherwise not have been available. So it's not replacing a human coach, but it is providing access to some of the benefits of coaching. to people who otherwise wouldn't have had that time-intensive resource available.
Emma Weber says it's all about the mix.
What tools are we using and for what for? Well, of course, we're creating and generating our own generative version of Coach M, or Gen M, as we're affectionately calling her, which is, of course, designed to help people implement learning and behavior change. So it's getting people to slow down and reflect and helping them move forward with the action plans that they set themselves as part of learning. So we're specifically creating and, of course, using that tool for ourselves as well. And so, of course, we have created the Coach M tool, which is actually a coaching tool. And one of my favorite ways to use the Coach M tool is augmented with human coaching. So you can then have the benefits of a human coach as well as having coaching to maintain momentum in between coaching sessions. So I think we'll increasingly see technology using as an add-on to human coaching. But what we'll really need to look at is it a reminding way or a prompting way, or is it really coaching people, getting them to slow down and reflect and hold themselves accountable to their action plans?
Here's Matthew Borg with an example from healthcare.
We recently launched a program for newly qualified nurses, and part of their work is reflection on their daily practice. They log their reflections and then have the option of sharing that reflection with an AI coach who can give them some immediate feedback, some encouragement based on the nursing code of practice that it's been trained on. So all of this can be picked up then in one-to-ones with their line manager or more senior nurses who may be supporting their development.
Liz Naylor is senior consultant at NIIT and comes back to this point about AI tool and overwhelm.
How do you keep up to date with everything Gen AI? Well, the answer is you can't. I tried and it felt like a full-time job. So when the Gen AI gurus that I'm following themselves admitted not being able to keep up, that actually gave me a reassurance that they also feel this overwhelm. Learning departments need to start putting AI on their strategic agenda, and many other parts of the business could well be much further ahead. And I think if learning don't do this, they will really get left behind. We have to accept that Gen AI is radically changing the whole world of work, and no one has worked it out fully just yet. So we really need to keep an agile mindset and embrace the new technology, because I think there's some really exciting times ahead.
How about a rant to head us towards finishing off? Bob Mosher.
Is AI affecting the world of L&D now and in the future? I will show my bias here, my friend, in that L&D to be a fairly conservative, if I may, and also risk-averse industry. I've been trying to throw a wrench at it for, again, 20 years with a shift from a training mindset to one of performance. And I will be honest, I'm often asked, what's my biggest obstacle in that work? And my answer's L&D. We have understandably long and trusted methodologies, approaches, frameworks, and I get all those. I've been in the business 41 years. So I think I've earned those biases, honestly. But our first responsibility, like the doctor's oath to always remain current, right? I think we have the same in L&D. We have to be in R&D. So it will absolutely affect the work that L&D does now in the future, I think in some remarkably powerful ways, if we remain open to it, because this train has left the station.
And the last word goes to Leo Locker.
I think L&D will either get really big or really small and will finally need to become much closer, much better acquainted with parts of the organization, like knowledge management, like internal comms and so on, with the capabilities to really string everything together and serve it up in the moment. The distinctions that really should have been overcome in the past already really should become a thing of the past now. I think a lot of that will benefit from much better integration. The learners, the users will expect things to be more seamless. So we really need to get our act together and start looking across the fence and making some new friends.